Part 3. The Flower. Chapter 1. Year 3. 8th May, 2091. This is the end of the third Earth year of our voyage to Wharf 25, to meet with the others and learn our fate. Humans being superstitious about anniversaries, they asked that we each write up a summarizing statement for these occasions. For me, it's pointless, since I recall everything, whether it's important or not, but I will do it. Snowbird is more intimately involved with the humans than I am. That's natural. The white family is more social, even among Martians. We yellows are better observers. The most interesting thing about the year to come is that we're approaching the midpoint, turnaround time. The past year has been more or less uneventful for Martians, though it could have been our ending. The brown Piatur fungus almost stopped growing, which would eventually have been fatal for us. But Meryl and Carmen figured out what was wrong. It was lacking nitrates. That is, the pseudo-Martian ecosystem was not probably recycling nitrates. We only need trace quantities, so the lack wasn't obvious. Human agriculture needs large amounts, though, and they are full of it. A day's production of human urine gives us a year's worth. Snowbird continued working with Meryl and Carmen on their language lessons, and I sometimes participated, though it has become steadily more difficult. We seem to have covered all of the easy vocabulary, and it's hard to explore the more difficult words and phrases without Moonboy's synthesizer. They can't even approximate many of the sounds. Moonboy could do well within the range of his hearing. I think he might be able to help us more if the other humans weren't so afraid of him. Snowbird says that some of that fear is reflected fear of their own potential for not sane behavior. Moonboy scares them, and he knows he's scaring them, which reinforces the behavior. Meryl explained this to Snowbird, but being able to explain it is not the same as coping with it. Namir and I have been playing chess, a variation of the game called Kriegsspiele, where neither player is allowed to look at the board. You have to keep the positions of the pieces in your memory as you play. That requires no effort on my part, of course. Like any other yellow Martian, one glance will fix the board in my memory for the rest of my life. Namir makes up for his occasional memory lapse by what he calls killer instinct, and he wins almost every time. I think it's less killer instinct than the fact that his moves are sometimes based on a board that doesn't exist, and so are impossible for me to anticipate. Kriegsspiele is normally played with a third person, a referee who keeps track of the progress of the game with a physical board out of sight. The referee tells you whether a move is impossible, blocked by another piece, or whether you've successfully captured a piece. We started out with Carmen as a referee, but I pointed out that she was supernumerary. I could tell Namir if a move was not possible or had been successful, and of course would not lie. Snowbird plays a board game with the humans too, a word game called Scrabble, which Meryl had brought along as part of her weight allowance, indicating that the game is important to her, and she is skilled at it. Carmen also plays, and they have a list of Martian words that may be used and count double. I've played the game, but find it maddeningly slow. Badminton, on the other hand, is plenty fast enough for us in this gravity. Snowbird enjoys it, and I do not. Jumping around like that is ungraceful and painful. But a certain amount of exercise is necessary, as is the appearance of working with the humans as a team. Whose side will we be on when we get to Wharf 25? The others did make us. And, speaking as an individual, I can't pretend to be a free agent, independent of their will. I had absolutely no control over myself the one time the others needed me to do their bidding, when I suddenly parroted their message in 2079. There could be a large variety of complex behaviors they are able to trigger with a word, or just a particular beam of light, as happened then. Suppose they ordered me to open the airlock door. but I suspect the fact that we haven't yet been obliterated means that the others know where we are and what we're doing. The humans' efforts to keep the mission secret probably amuse them. If they are capable of being amused. There are so many basic things we don't know about them, or have just inferred from incomplete data. One thing that does seem inescapable is their lack of concern for human life, and probably Martian life as well. When we meet them, we will need to come up with some reason for their allowing us to live. Something that doesn't have to do with the immorality or injustice of exterminating us. What is important to them? Is there anything we can do that would make them happy? Whatever happy means. Maybe destroying planets is the only thing that pleases them. We inhabit a different world of time. They seem glacially slow to us, and we must seem like annoying insects to them, buzzing around with our inconsequential lives, our tiny and evanescent concerns. That was the way Namir put it. There are no glaciers as such on Mars, and no insects other than the ones that humans brought along for agriculture. In a few months, the charade will be over. No sense in trying to hide our existence once we've pointed our matter annihilation jet directly at the others. Prior to our turnaround, a small, fast probe will broadcast a description of what we're planning to do. Though it's not much of a plan, please don't kill us before you hear what we have to say. As if we could really understand each other.